Mini episode 340 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 340. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We have with us today one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries, our friend who is the editor of Giant Insider, coming out to talk NFL football. It's Ken Palmer. We are just past the midpoint of the NFL season, checking out what's going to be happening from here on in. Ken, good to have you with us today, my friend. How you doing?
Good, Rick. Sorry it took so long, but I'm so glad to be back on with you, buddy.
We're glad to get you back on here, as always, and make a little bit of a review, a little bit of an overview around the NFC as well as the AFC. I'd like to first start with the hot-button topic of the moment, the Richie Incognito scandal. Get your thoughts on this. I have a feeling we may differ on this. I'm just guessing. I will tell you from my perspective, and as I've noted previously on the show, the Dolphins are my 1A team. I've been a Dolphins fan ever since as a real, real young kid catching the tail end of Bob Greasy's career. I was a Bob Greasy fan. Joe Bonino very memorably abusing me in a confrontation on this show a couple of years back for having a 1A team. But I have noted that for a long time. I have to tell you, I am deeply ashamed to be a Dolphin fan at this moment in time. I'm ashamed of this organization, which apparently has been running amok over this period of time. I'm ashamed of the clubhouse, these players coming out and basically putting their thumb on the scale here. We love Richie Incognito and taking all these shots at Jonathan Martin while the facts are still coming to light. They're professing to be unaware of the things that were done, and yet unconditionally having Richie Incognito's back anyways, Brian Hartline, Ryan Tannehill, et cetera. I am ashamed at this moment in time. Well, what are your thoughts on this?
I don't disagree with you totally, but I do. This is football, man. I mean, I never played pro. I barely played college. I, played throughout high school and grammar school and Pop Warner. Football's a tough game. I mean, you have to be physically tough and mentally tough to succeed. And there's no question Jonathan Martin is physically tough or he wouldn't have gotten this far. But I just can't imagine that this kid, and I don't know all that went down. No one really does. It's still coming out. But to me, I just think, I don't want to say it's being overblown because then I seem like I'm insensitive and I'm not politically correct and all that stuff. But to be honest with you, Rick, maybe I'm not. I think it's being overblown. This is football. If this were dance class or a ballet class or theater, go right ahead. Bullying can't happen. But these guys are tough. These guys are supposed to be tough. They're supposed to be able to handle this stuff. Would you give someone 15 grand if they asked you for it? I wouldn't, unless I was getting 15 grand worth for it. So, I mean, to me, I just don't, I don't know. Maybe I'm old-fashioned or whatever. I just think it's being overblown, and I think this is the type of thing where people are now trying to make Richie Incognito out to be Aaron Hernandez. I actually heard that comparison today. That, to me, is the dumbest thing a human being could ever say. But it's going to go there. It's starting to go there already, and it will continue to because today's society allows it. Today's society feeds into it. Football's a tough game. If you can't handle it, go do something else. That's my thoughts on it, Rick.
Okay, I have two responses to that. One would be, I think bullying, that's a hot-button term. I think it's the wrong term. I think extortion is what we're talking about, Ken. I want to
totally
start on that
agree
point.
With you, buddy. Yep.
And this whole thing about why did he just punch him, let me tell you something. When you are a rookie, Richie Incognito is not exactly Jonathan Martin's boss, but he kind of is. There is no quicker way to get labeled somebody who's not a team player than if you stand up to somebody who is abusing their authority over you. Politically, sociologically, in that clubhouse, you cannot, as a rookie, stand up for yourself. You really can't. If somebody is abusing their authority as a veteran And, yeah, hazing goes on in every clubhouse. It's generally within reason, as we've been hearing this week. But Richie Incognito was on the leadership council. He was one of six guys on the council in that clubhouse, which calls into question Joe Philbin's basic credibility and competence, quite frankly. You've got a situation where, politically, Richie Incognito has the whip hand on this kid. So how's he supposed to stand up for himself on these kind of things when apparently when he goes to management, they go back and say, you need to toughen this kid up. That's the amount of reasoning that they're showing right now. You know, it's way too simplified in terms of standing up for yourself. Ideally, should.
Rick, let me tell you this real quick, though. Let me bring you back to the Jim Fossil Giants. And granted, his career didn't work out as well as we thought due to injuries and immaturity, but Brandon Short was, quote-unquote, bullying Jeremy Shockey when Jeremy Shockey was a rookie. You know what Jeremy Shockey did? He punched Brandon Short in the face, and he became a hero for it. So there is a flip side. I definitely hear what you're saying, but Brandon Short was an established defensive captain, defensive leader on the Giants, and he tried to bully and embarrass Jeremy Shockey in the lunchroom, and Jeremy Shockey said, you know what, I'm going to punch you in your face. So I definitely hear what you're saying, but there are definitely ways to handle it differently. And Jeremy Shockey became a hero for that, and I'm not saying Martin would have become a hero for it, but there is that option. And, you know, we all have young kids now, and you always tell them to turn the other cheek and don't be the first one to start a fight. But the first thing I'll tell my kid or any other kid, if someone hits you, hit them back. And that's what, you know, Jeremy Shockey did right there. He was, in effect, being bullied, being embarrassed, being hazed, and he took matters into his own hands. And, you know, more power to him for it. So I definitely hear what you're saying, but as a 315-pound football player who's groomed to be violent, you can't just slink away and just, you know, wither away into the weeds and you know, with your tail between your legs. You got to do something. And Jeremy Shockey's living proof that you can do something. And if you do something, you're going to get applauded for it more than you're going to be vilified for it.
Well, I'm real glad you brought up Jeremy Shockey. As somebody who covers the Giants as much as you do, because this will allow us to get into that point before I go to my second follow-up here, and I hear everything you're saying, and look, as somebody who, I haven't often alluded to it on the program, but somebody who did take a lot of bullying when I was growing up, and one of the defining moments when I was growing up, you talk about telling your kids to hit back whenever, one of the defining moments when I was growing up, I've been taking crap from a kid for a week who, ironically, was bullied by a bunch of other bullies who didn't have the stones themselves to stand up to me. I reached my breaking point. I baited him into hitting me because I told him that one more time, that's it, Kevin, and he didn't listen to me after a week. So I started wailing on him, got the upper hand, and as they were leading us away, I was screaming going into the principal's office, call my dad. He said it's okay.
Yeah.
I didn't throw the first punch. So I
Good
hear you.
For you,
I
Rick.
Hear you.
Good for you, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I laid a trap for the kid, and I got away with it. But here's the thing. We talk about Jeremy Shockey. We all know the stigma that went with his career, okay? And the fact that he was that, that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Jeremy Shockey, and you may not agree, a lot of people may not agree, that's a guy that did have a stigma in many quarters as being a me guy. And I don't know to what extent if that shortened his career. I don't know if he physically could have kept going longer than he did. But that's a guy, and he was strong enough to carry that. But how many people are going to be okay with, you know what, people think I'm selfish, people think I'm a jerk? You basically have to put yourself out there if you're going to be willing to stand up to a Richie Incognito like that.
Yeah, but if you're drafting a kid, you want the kid to have that backbone. To me, that again, I'm going back to just simple football. You know, if we're talking about a different sport here, a different, you know, profession, maybe the rules are different. But to me, football, you got to stand up for yourself. I mean, you know, I mean, these guys are easily bullied. You know, they're 300 pounds, most of them, and they can bench press 800 pounds in, you know, small vehicles. So to me, I don't think Jeremy Shockey was being a me guy. He was defending himself. And you know what? There was not one time the rest of his career with the Giants that anyone screwed with him. So anyone else that thought, wow, well, Jeremy, you know, he's selfish or he's immature or we can pick on him, the second that thing went down, that was instant credibility. And, you know, guys won't say that on the record because, again, we're in a sensitive, politically correct environment now, which is absurd. But the second he did that, his legend with the Giants and in that locker room grew. You know, was management embarrassed? Of course. Wellington Mara probably was freaking out over it, didn't want to have anything to do with it or know about it. Jim Fossil swore the team to be quiet about it. Of course, three guys immediately came to me, and I broke the story, which I'm still proud of. But, you know, that guy, his legend continued to grow because he did the right thing in that spot. He was being put on a spot. You could either walk away with your tail between your legs, or you can fight back. And he fought back, and to me it wasn't a selfish thing. It was how he was raised. It was why he played the game that way, and it was why he never disappeared from his team like Jonathan Martin did. I mean, this guy wasn't a backup and a slub. This guy just walked away from a team in a playoff race that needs him. So, I mean, I know, you know, now you're getting into the mental thing and, you know, or their mental health issues, and that I can't speak to. I have enough mental health issues myself. But to me, he did the right thing, Jeremy Shockey, and it wasn't a selfish thing. It was a competitive, prideful thing.
You actually started to anticipate what was going to be my other follow-up question, Aaron. To me, there is something deeply, deeply paradoxical in terms of, I agree that we are in a very politically correct climate, and for anybody that examines from my politics on down, everyone knows how squarely I stand against that. And yet, I have to say, we're also still in a climate that is deeply, deeply ignorant of psychological and mental health issues. And I come from a perspective of having had some friends who have battled some real demons in that regard. We are looking at, by all accounts right now, somebody who is dealing with that. He left the team, yes. He's in a place. He is getting Jonathan Martin professional help of some nature, and that has yet to be clarified. But, again, when we're talking about football's a man's game, you got to have stones to play football, do we not risk getting into oversimplification if we're dealing with somebody who is on razor's edge with some mental and psychological issues here? And Richie Incognito, from what has come out, he is on medication of some sort, and this kid may be in need of it himself here. So it really is a thing of where, is there not some more education that's needed, I think, before people go out and say, it really comes down to this kid is soft or this kid this or that or whatever. We don't know the mental and psychological picture yet, which I think is still going to emerge.
Yeah, no, Rick, you're 100% correct there, but today's day and age doesn't matter. No one cares. Everyone's forming their opinion now. It doesn't matter what we find out in 3 months or 6 months. Everyone already has their opinion now, and facts may come out to disprove it. They're not going to change their opinion. This kid is soft. This kid is a baby. Richie Incognito is the biggest, you know, animal ever to walk the earth. And that's where people are, and that's the end of it. And I agree with you. Obviously, there's more to it. But you know as well as I do, unfortunately, it's not going to ever come out. And when it does come out by that point, it doesn't matter. No one cares. When things happen, people come up with their opinions in 4 seconds. Most people don't have the brain power to formulate these opinions, yet they come up with them, and they stick with them. So I definitely agree with you that there is something wrong with Jonathan Martin, and we shouldn't oversimplify it, and we shouldn't overlook it. But the bottom line is, from a perception standpoint, it doesn't matter. No one cares. He's the quitter and a walker and a crybaby, and Incognito's the bully and the, you know, the moron and the this and the that, and that's how people are going to see this. And it's unfortunate because neither are really the case. You know, it is an oversimplification, but in today's media, as you well know, that's what happens. Because next week, something else is going to be up that's going to dominate the airwaves for a full week. And every day you get in the car after work and you're like, oh, my God, they're still talking about this. That's what's up with this Jonathan Martin thing. And it's not even over yet. But like I said, in most people's minds, it's already over. Everyone already decided what you know, what side they're on and who's right and who's wrong, and they're done with it. It's kind of on to the next scandal, unfortunately, Rick.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, Ken, you've encapsulated the bottom line of this week, which is basically that old saying about the opinions are like a-holes and everybody's got one.
That's basically, if not two.
Yeah, that's the only truism of this week, sadly, and incidents like this always seem to remind us of that, no matter how uneducated the opinions may be. I know the opinions are always educated when we're talking football with you, so let's take a look at where we're at in the NFL midseason here. Going by conference, in the AFC, some surprises there perhaps in terms of the level of dominance that we've seen with Denver, the fall-offs from Baltimore and Houston. I fingered the Texans as a Super Bowl team this year. Clearly wrong about that for a number of reasons and for a number of factors. Injuries haven't helped, but still, that has been a real interesting situation. And then the AFC East being a real jungle there. New England thought to win that division by default. They probably still will take it, but maybe not as much by default as everybody had thought with the overall strength in there. So what are your overall thoughts looking at the AFC midseason as far as the most notable developments?
Yeah, well, I mean, I had the Broncos going to the Super Bowl, and then your boy Stevie Cervello talked me out of it and made me pick the Texans. And so I ended up picking the Texans in my paper, and now I look silly for it. But, you know, who could have seen that? You know, I mean, that's a team that looked loaded for bear, and now you got a quarterback that hits the opponents more than he hits his own team. So that's a sad situation for the Texans. And let's be honest, I mean, as a Giants guy, I have to give props to the Jets. I mean, who the heck thought they'd be in this position even after they got to the even spot? There was no way in the world they were going to beat the Saints. I mean, the Saints were going to come into MetLife and blow their doors off, and they won the game. So, I mean, to me, I don't think it's too far-fetched to say that the two biggest surprises are the Texans being awful and the Jets being right in there in a playoff contention.
Absolutely. And, you know, and with all of that, and I realized as soon as I asked you the question – I hadn't even mentioned in this the Kansas City Chiefs, which just, I suppose, reinforces the notion that they are the most lightly regarded 9-0 team of all time. And I'm sure that the Chiefs fans out there are going to be crying, lack of respect, lack of respect, when the point spread comes out the first time they play Denver. But realistically, that's a team that I think most of us are slotting right now in the 5 seed. That makes it very interesting in terms of wanting to stay out of the 4 spot, doesn't it? You do not want to be the last of the 4 division winners.
No, no question. Yeah, that's where you need to not be if you're a team that's looking to go any distance there. And that's it. I mean, the Chiefs, they go ahead and beat Denver all of a sudden. Okay, people are going to take them seriously, and let's see what kind of team they are. I mean, I'm honestly, listen, I didn't think they'd be 9-0. I thought they'd be good, though. I really thought the quarterback and the coach, you know, both with new locations, they're both, you know, kind of coming together. I thought this was going to be a pretty good team. I'll be honest with you. Again, maybe a 6-3 team. I didn't think they'd be 9-0, but I'm not that surprised that they're doing as well as they are. And let's be honest, look at the schedule. I know this isn't college football, but they haven't exactly beaten, you know, they haven't beaten a whole bunch of good teams. They're just beating the teams in front of them. So, you know, they deserve a ton of credit, but it's going to take them winning a couple playoff games and potentially even getting to the Super Bowl before anyone really gives them the credit that they're so desperately seeking, Rick.
Yeah, and that's a real validation, isn't it, of the approach of the front office? Because, again, as much as I've whined on this program over a period of time, held up the Browns organization as an example of everything you don't want to be historically, a new regime comes in, treats everybody that they inherited like they got cooties. All you got to do is look at how Joe Banner was shopping Josh Gordon out there, ironically, for the cost of about 3 dime bags until he pulled him back at the trade deadline. It really is one of these situations with Kansas City. They took what they had defensively, and they built on it. They didn't judge everybody guilty until proven innocent just because they played for the last regime. That's a lesson that hopefully is going to take root around the league, I would hope, for the betterment of the game.
You would think, but you know what? There's so much arrogance, and I don't say that negatively, because most of the time you need that arrogance and that confidence to get where you need to be. But that's really what it is. You know, Rick, if you drafted a team and I'm taking it over, I'm thinking I could have done better than Rick. So I'm looking to change this. I'm looking to change that. And maybe this guy doesn't look so good. So I almost think there's that, you know, you can't change the whole team, obviously, but I almost think there's that arrogance to think that the previous guy, win, lose, or draw, couldn't possibly have done as good as I would have, or couldn't possibly know as much as I would. And as a result, you see that. You almost see change for the sake of change as opposed to change for the sake of betterment. And it's unfortunate. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you definitely see that a lot around this league these days.
No question about that. Pivoting to the NFC, let's take a look first at the NFC East, because that's what you have been most involved in covering with the Giant Insider. The worst division in football by far. It blows my mind how absolutely pathetic top to bottom this division has been. I picked your Giants to win the division at the beginning of the year. The funny thing is, 2-6, they're still in it. You can't rule anything out at this point because of the overall crappiness of it top to bottom. You've got a Philadelphia team bringing in this wild offense and no defense, and from week to week we've seen the wild extremes that they have been at. Dallas right now sort of looks like the default choice to win the division and kind of hang on. But anyway, a slice of what I said about the AFC, nobody's going to want to play Kansas City in the first round. In that division, you pretty much know you're getting Seattle or San Francisco in your building in the first round. That doesn't seem like much of a prize for making the playoffs in the wild card round.
Yeah, no doubt. But although if you're that wild card team, you're going to get to go to play either Dallas or whoever ends up winning this division. You know, figure you're going to put them in the four spot. So if you're 5 or 6, you have no problem going to play in Dallas in the playoffs. It's amazing how bad this division is. I mean, I'm shocked that I figured the Giants would be a 4-4 team, maybe a 5-3 team at this point. Certainly not 2-6. I figured Dallas would win the division, but again, not in dominant fashion, not because they're such a good team, but more by default, like you had said. So I figured the Eagles would be improved. They are. You know, they're not good enough to win the division. The Redskins are kind of a mess. Last night was kind of their death knell. They were still in a conversation until then. But, you know, I mean, it'd be surprising if anything other than Dallas winning the division happens, but it would be more surprising if they're able to even win a playoff game. And granted, as the NFC East champs, they're going to have a home playoff game, but there's no doubt in my mind whoever ends up in the wild card going to Dallas is going to win that first game, Rick.
No question, and probably going away, one would think. You would think it's by a great margin. In looking at the other divisions, not a lot of shock necessarily at the top of the divisions. When you look at people expected New Orleans to bounce back, people expected Green Bay to be strong. Obviously, Seattle and San Francisco have done what they've done in the West. If we're going to put our finger on any surprises, perhaps it would be Detroit rallying to be in a tie for the divisional lead at this point in the North, and Atlanta just absolutely falling apart in the South. Injuries have a lot to do with that. The defense has been also a lot worse than people have thought. And to whatever extent, if anybody had Tampa Bay pegged as any kind of a dark horse playoff contender, them being 0-8 really kind of comes as a surprise. Although I said in my preseason picks, Tampa Bay was one of the teams I had a harder time getting a read on out of anybody in the league. And obviously this has turned out to be the worst of all possible extremes here for them. As far as it goes with them, we almost kind of saw this coming really from the start of Greg Schiano's career, that really kind of shameful showboating thing of going after the kneel down against the quarterback in the initial game against your New York Giants a year ago.
Yeah, that was terrible. I mean, talk about a guy that had it all, you know, in Rutgers, where the bar, you know, you can't even say the bar was high. The bar was medium at best. You know, and listen, I would never criticize a college coach for leaving to go coach a pro team. That's your goal there. That's your dream. You got to go fulfill it. But he should have realized, and maybe he should have talked to a couple other college coaches that made the jump. It's a different ballgame. These guys make more than you do now. They don't want to hear you. They don't want to listen to you. They're certainly not fearful of you. That's for sure. And he learned that the hard way. And yeah, that game against the Giants last year was just laughable. I mean, he was, you know, he probably thought he was going to make his mark around the league as I'm a hard-nosed coach and I'm a tough guy and this and that. And what he proved was he's a jackass. And unfortunately for him, he's never going to shake that, because I can't believe he's still a coach now. I understand it's only his second year, but there is no question he will not be the coach next year. So to me, I wouldn't think he's going to finish this year at this point. I would figure he's going to go in the next game or two if they don't win a couple games here. But, you know, can't fault the guy for for trying to make a difference, but you can fault the guy for trying to, you know, reinvent the game and act like he invented it, which is a lot of what you heard with him when he was in Rutgers and certainly now. So he, you know, for most people that know him and that are around him and the team, he can't be gone soon enough from the Bucks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And just like I had said, that game against the Giants, so the first game of his pro coaching career, was the canary in the coal mine for what was going to come afterwards, because everything we're seeing now is sort of manifested in that moment very perfectly. And looking at the top teams in the NFC, deliberately leaving aside the NFC East, but as far as when you're looking at Green Bay now going the next couple of weeks without Aaron Rodgers, you've got New Orleans trying to hang on to win the South, to fend off Carolina, coming off of a very bad loss to the Jets, because it's really going to complicate matters for them in running down Seattle or San Francisco. And New Orleans wants no part of having to go to Seattle for a potential NFC championship game. There's going to be a great regular season game later in the season where they have to do just that. But what are your thoughts on looking at the top contenders in the NFC? I had picked San Francisco prior to the season to come out of the NFC, but said I thought Seattle was going to be right there. I'll kind of stand by that I think it's going to be one of those two teams. But what do you think as you're looking at it?
Yeah, it's hard not to see it being one of those two teams. I went with Seattle before the year. You know, and I mean, obviously so far you can't argue with the record. You know, maybe they've had a couple close calls lately, but at the end of the day, that doesn't really matter. You win or you lose. San Fran, you know, that's a team that started slow, and now you look up, and they only have two losses. So they're right in the mix, and it's hard to imagine, you know, put Rodgers back on the Packers. Of course, they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs. Put Cutler back on the Bears, they're not so tough, you know, and they're, you know, we've already ruled out the East. There's no doubt about that. So, I mean, there's just not a lot of good contenders right here. You would think, you know, maybe Detroit gets hot and, you know, with that offense, and obviously they have a great home field advantage there, but it's tough to see anyone other than those two teams. The interesting thing though will be, with one of them being in a one spot and one of them being in a five spot, it's likely not going to get to those two playing in the NFC Championship. They're likely to meet before they get to that final round. So then you're looking at, okay, you know, who else is going to be in that NFC Championship game? And to me, my money would be on Rodgers, you know, if he comes back with the Packers, but you know, there's a long way to go there.
I think no question about that. They're going to really be in the hole from having had to make up the ground, the games that they may lose for him not being in the lineup, what their record is now, as far as the fact that they're already looking up at both Seattle and San Francisco, and San Francisco has the tiebreaker on them. I agree with that completely. Great talking pro football with you, Ken.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.